people around the world. Take your smartphone to your Bluetooth with your earpiece on your ear. Take your iPod, your iPad with your HD display. Connect them to the cloud so your data's up to date. With your tablet in the air, play some solid game. Log into Facebook, tag a photo you can share. Tweet your plans, and play some Angry Birds now. Come on, baby, tell me who's the nerd? Nerd up. Everybody say, grab your GPS and get up on your Segway. Nerd up. It's a way of the world. No matter where you are, you got a 4G signal.
It's time for the Nerd Up Podcast, and here's your pod hosts, Guilty Wilson.
Nerd Up! Welcome to another episode of the Nerd Up Podcast. I'm Guilty Wilson.
I'm Eric Billingsley.
I'm Isaac Wilson.
And I'm Lisa Mees.
What, Lisa Mees? Wait a minute. One of you guys has got a high voice. Oh, hey, Lisa. Oh, yeah, Lisa Mees. I invited you here. Lisa Mees is, wait a minute, what did we decide that your title was?
Lackey.
Lackey, yeah. For Starbase Indy, and she's, we're going to be talking about Starbase Indy here just moments from now, because Lisa is going to be telling us all about these special guests, and there's one guest that I can't wait to meet, and that's Jeffrey Combs. But we'll talk about that in a minute. Starbase Indy, it basically started out as a Star Trek con, right?
Yes.
Okay, and it's kind of expanded a little bit.
It has. We're more of a general science fiction convention at this point.
But first, before we go into that, I want to talk about a previous guest we had on the show, Todd Black, a comic book artist from Champaign, Illinois. He recently had a Kickstarter for a comic book miniseries he was wanting to do. It's called Home. And it's about a girl with blue hair who fixes code. I got information from him just right before we started recording the podcast that it got fully funded. It's like, woohoo! And I pledged it's really awesome. I pledged the proper amount to where I'm going to be put into the comic in his Kickstarter. But instead, I'm going to have it. It's fully funded for issue number one. I think he said it was a 6-issue run. Isaac will be in it because he's better looking than me. So I thought it'd be better for him to be in the comic than me.
That goes without saying.
All right, now let's talk about what we came here to talk about, and that is Lisa Mees with Starbase Indy. Yes, that's in Indianapolis. It's a Star Trek convention. It started out, this is the 20th year, is that correct?
So this is the 20th generation. The first year was actually 1988, so we've had some temporal distortion in there. another convention was in there for a while that wasn't Starbase Indy, and there were some years that were missed and stuff. But so this is our 20th generation.
Wow, okay. I see. Those time distortions, darn it.
You can't have a Star Trek series without some time distortion.
I know, that's true. Especially when Next Generation went back and they went on board the Enterprise with the Tribbles. That was my favorite one. Started out as a little Star Trek convention, so to speak. Now it's a multiple science fiction. But this time around, you've got lots of special guests, and most of them, have all of them been on Star Trek at some point?
You know, that's a really good question.
I know most of them.
Let's see. And many of them have been on multiple. So Jeffrey Combs, I think you mentioned.
Yeah.
He's been on both Enterprise and Deep Space Nine. Eric Pierpoint has been on Enterprise, Voyager, Next Generation, and Deep Space Nine. Doesn't look like Anna Grauer has been on any, I don't think she's been on the Star Trek series, but she's been on Stargate SG-1 and Stargate Atlantis and Stargate Universe. So we've got Chris Noland, who was on Stargate Atlantis. He was on Supernatural. He's been on Arrow. Jay Akavone, best known for his role on Stargate, SG-1, Major Kowalski. He's been at Starbase Indy before. He's a great guest. He's a lot of fun hanging out with fans.
Yeah, I was looking back at previous years and guests from previous years. I saw his name.
Yeah, I think this will be his third visit to Starbase Indy. Natalia Nogalich has been on Next Generation and Deep Space Nine. Lee Ehrenberg, who was in Pirates of the Caribbean.
Oh, yeah.
He's grumpy on Once Upon a Time. We're hoping he's not grumpy in person. But he's been on Next Generation. He's been on Enterprise. He's been on Deep Space Nine. The thing about these character actors is they often, once you kind of get into that circulation, they often end up on multiple series.
Well, I know Jeffrey Combs, I remember seeing him. First of all, I mean, Eric and I are big fans of the Reanimator movie.
Mm-hmm.
And we saw him on there. And then it's funny because that's the first time I had ever seen him as an actor was in The Reanimator back in the 80s. And then when you see him in character, in costume on these other episodes, it's like, that's The Reanimator. Because, I mean, there's no denying who they are until they get on. I tell you what, the worst makeup that you can't recognize, that's the Ferengi. It's like you can almost not recognize him. Only one I ever recognize that out of makeup is Armin Shimmerman anyway. But mm-hmm.
We had him a couple years ago. He was great.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's right. And it's like he's the only one I recognize out of makeup whenever they play a Ferengi. But Jeffrey Combs, I was like, oh, hey, that's him. You know, and I saw his makeup, different looks on your website. It's starbaseindie.com. And right. I saw the different looks on there. And I was like, wow, it's definitely him, but it's definitely different characters. So
it's really impressive. We don't have him this year, but we've had John Paladin several years. And he's one of the makeup artists that has worked on the Star Trek series. And so he has come in and put the actors into their character makeup. And that's a lot of fun and has given away a makeover.
Oh,
so,
wow.
Makeover one of the attendees into a Klingon or a Ferengi or whatever.
Right.
And it's cool to watch the process.
All right. Well, you're the Star Trek expert. What's the ones that, Jeffrey Combs played one, the blue face with the little antenna things?
Andorians.
Andorians, yeah. That's what I would do. Why, I don't know, but that's the one I would do.
You have a thing about blue hair, blue antenna.
I know,
antenna.
Right? I think that's a thing with me. If not, I'm starting one right now. But anyway, yeah, I mean, first of all, the guests alone are reason enough to go. Oh, Eric Pierpoint, that's another one. I loved him in Alien Nation. He was mm-hmm. phenomenal in that TV series.
Yep, George Francisco was his character.
Yep, unlike in the movie. Well, no, wait. I think they changed. In the movie, it was Sam Francisco, because they made a whole joke about all the aliens when they came to Earth. They gave them funny names. And I think in the TV series, they talked about how they changed it so that it was more acceptable or something like. But yeah, I loved him in that series. I was hooked on that series when it was on television. And when I saw his face on there, I'm like, oh, okay, there's another person I have to go talk to.
The great thing about Starbase City is we really prioritize guests who are fan-friendly, who are interested in talking to the fans, who are interested in interacting. You know, a lot of times if you go to conventions and they have the really big name guests, these people aren't even staying at the same hotel as the convention.
Right.
There are the folks who are in this because it's a job, and mm-hmm. they come in and they sign their pieces, and then we tend to get people who want to hang out with the fans. We've got several events where you get a chance to sort of hang out and talk to the actors. We've got Dinner with the Stars, where some of the actors are going to be performing. There's a reception Friday night for anyone who's staying at the hotel that the actors will probably be at. So there's a couple of different things. Like I said, there's Dinner with the Stars, where the tables have, I think it's 8 people at them, and one of them is one of our media guests. So you can go on our website and buy those tickets, and you can pick who you want to sit with.
Neat.
Some of them are probably sold out, but I don't have those details because they do sell out, right? The Friday night reception is for anyone who has a room at the hotel. If you don't know a lot about small fan-run conventions, part of what helps the convention is having a room at the hotel, because that's part of how the convention gets a discount on the space and those sorts of things. Anybody who has a room, there's going to be a reception. It's probably a cash bar at the hotel on Friday night. And then on Saturday night, we have a thing called a Barfleet party. And Barfleet is an organization that exists to throw parties at mostly small fan-run conventions. We did win the best party competition at Worldcon the last time it was in one of our cities, which was 2012 when it was up in Chicago. And I think we actually won, some of our folks went to London last year and won the best party contest there as well. You know, after all the stages are locked up for the night, you need to hang around and talk to other geeks, right? So convention parties are a long time tradition. Barfleet does it on kind of a big scale. We have a dance floor. We have a bar. We do not charge for drinks. We're basically throwing a party for our friends. And if you come to the convention, you can be one of our friends.
Mm-hmm.
And we typically get half or more of the actors. Most of them will stop by. But we usually have quite a few of them stay late into the night. I know Jay will be there all night. Mm-hmm. It's a good time. It's not. And I've been asking, because I'm heavily involved in that organization as well.
Uh-huh.
And I've been asking all of our guests who come by the event if they've ever seen anything like it.
Because a lot of these people do many conventions.
Right.
And generally they say, no, I've never seen anything like that before.
Is this the same one that's going to have the Battle of the Bands?
Yes, we will have a Battle of the Bands. That'll be Friday night. We've got Five Year Mission, who I think almost everybody involved in Star Trek has heard of by this time. They've gotten quite a lot of recognition. They're local to Indianapolis.
Yeah, I saw them play at the Indie PopCon, not this past year, but the year before. They played at the after party. They were awesome.
Yeah, they're great. They've played the Vegas convention, the big Star Trek convention in Vegas. They've introduced William Shatner. They're kind of, what they do is really cool.
They're kind of a big deal.
Yeah, they're kind of going to be a big deal. It's pretty cool. Then there's another local band called Yavin 5 that is a Star Wars band. So we have a Battle of the Bands, Star Trek versus Star Wars.
That would be awesome, especially if they play the Cantina song. See, what I like about Five Year Mission, like Eric said, we both saw them at the Indie PopCon a couple years ago, and that was my introduction to them. I'd heard about them, but I never really listened, and I got one of their DVDs. And basically, their music is, each song is a different episode of Star Trek. And I'm like, that is the coolest thing ever. I mean, and it's really good music, too. It's not just cheesy, like maybe you'd think a Weird Al Yankovic parody, but it's like it's a serious music with, you know, talking about whatever the episode of Star Trek is.
Or Indiana Jones versus Thor. Remember from the Big Bang Theory?
Oh, yeah. It's not that cheesy either. But yeah, it's really interesting stuff. Now, I'm curious to see how they'll fare up against a Star Wars, because, I mean, the Star Wars fans are coming out in droves because of the movie coming out. I don't know, but I think Star Trek's going to hold their own on this one.
Yeah, in past years we have done, it has been the Five Year Mission guys against a Klingon band. Has a Klingon band. And so with the new movie coming out, you always kind of wanted to look for new and interesting things. So we kind of doing a little different this year.
Well, I'll tell you what, it just sounds like a whole weekend of fun. I mean, let me go over the dates again. That's Thanksgiving weekend, the 27th through the 29th. Yeah, Isaac, it starts on your birthday. There's reason to celebrate.
You have to come celebrate with us.
That's what I keep trying to tell him.
My way of celebrating is having nobody home.
Playing video games and, no interruption. It's a Thanksgiving weekend, 27th through the 29th. I'm going to be there. I know for sure. But, it's going to be a whole weekend of just fun. Like you said, you got parties. You've got the whole convention thing going on. Now, I understand there's more than just the guests going on at this convention. I understand there's like some... I wouldn't say lectures, but panels?
Yeah, we've got panels. We've got three programming rooms going kind of all the time. We've got everything from conversations about the philosophy of Star Trek by some guys who've written a book by that name. Mm-hmm. We've got various science panels, cosmology, and there's a lot of kids programming that is, do a science experiment. I don't know exactly what they're doing this year. But they've done So You're on Tribble. That was Tribble Xenobiology one year. So there's always some kind of project that they've got for the kids to do. We have some gaming. We'll have a gaming room. Not video gaming, but tabletop.
But you got Artemis, right?
We do have Artemis.
Okay.
That's kind of its own special category. But we'll have the Artemis room going all weekend.
Okay.
And if your listeners aren't familiar with Artemis, basically you get to go be a crew member on a bridge, and it's a cooperative game. And the folks who run it for Starbase Indie, it's the same people who were running it at Indie PopCon. I know you guys were there. And they've got a nice setup. They've got a big screen. They've got the lights. They've got, everyone's got their own station, so their own monitor, and then there's a big shared monitor like there would be on, on the bridge of a starship.
Right.
Like you do.
Yeah, I saw that, at Indie PopCon. I wanted to take charge, but the lines were always too long. But yeah, it's like that. It's so cool of a great idea to, not only is it gaming, but it's cooperative gaming, and, it's just like you said, manning a bridge of a starship, and that's one of the coolest things about Artemis I ever heard, when I heard about it. Before I interrupted you, you're talking about something about tabletop gaming?
Yeah, so I don't know exactly what games they're running, but there's going to be a room with games in it, and you can come in and sit down with people and pick up a board game. It's a great way to get to know folks. We've got an amazing con suite as well, talking about places where you can sit down, get to know somebody. So if you're looking for something to drink or a snack, that's available to folks who are, who have convention badges all weekend. So with Starbase Indie, we're not the size of an Indie PopCon.
Right.
Indie PopCon had 22,000 turnstile this last year. We will almost certainly be under 1,000 people. It's a much more intimate environment.
Oh, not after being on the Nerd Up podcast.
Well, okay, so maybe 1,200 people.
I was thinking 1,001.
The advantage of that is that
it really gives you a chance, if you want to sit down and talk to Jeffrey Combs about, you know, what was his process as he put together the Wayun character for Star Trek Deep Space Nine, he has time to answer you. It's not 1,000 people in a room, because those 1,000 people that are at Service India spread out between a dozen different things that are going on.
Yeah, and
that's laid back.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. Yeah, more laid back, a lot more relaxing, and a lot more intimate. You, like you said, you get to know the other con attendees and the stars.
Absolutely. We're definitely a community. There are folks who think about it. I think about it as what I do over Thanksgiving weekend. This is where I go see my geek family. there are folks there that I only see once a year. But there are also people there I see at kind of all the local conventions. It's kind of running the same circles.
Oh, yeah, we do. Oh, and one other thing. I wanted to mention this. I forget the actress's name. She's the voice actress for Katya on Archer. And
Brower.
Yeah, yep. Okay, yeah. That's another one that I've just got to meet. It's like mainly, I mean, she's been in other things, but hey, she was an Archer.
She's been in Arrow, she's been in Fringe, she's been in V, she's been in Supernatural, she's been on Smallville, she's been three of the Stargate series. So yeah, she's done a lot of work, but yes, I think Archer may be what many of the fans know her from.
All right, well, by the way, we just got joined by Tim Coker. Tim, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
We're
sorry for the delay, guys.
Oh, no worries yet. You'll be fine, you'll see. It'll be in your next paycheck. We're talking to Lisa Meese. She's with Starbase Indy, and over Thanksgiving weekend in Indianapolis, the Starbase Indy convention, which, again, we talked about earlier, started out as a Star Trek con, but it's kind of branched out into a little mini sci-fi, but it's still mainly Star Trek convention. I'll be going there for sure. We're talking basically
all
about that.
All the cool people will be there.
I know, right? That's why I'm going to be there. So, and Lisa will be there, too. That got you caught up there. Well, what else did you got to share about Starbase Indy?
It's really affordable. It's not one of these conventions where the tickets are $200. The tickets are $50 online right now. They're $55 at the store. And that's for the whole weekend. You know, there are add-ons like dinners with the star. You know, we're going to feed you a nice dinner. We're going to charge you a little more money. But you can come in to the convention very affordably. It's a thing a lot of people do with their families. If you don't want to go fight the crowds on Black Friday or sit around and watch football Thanksgiving weekend, this gives you an alternative.
They're very much so, yes.
And the thing about small fan-run conventions, Indianapolis has gotten a lot of big commercial conventions over the last couple of years. We've had Wizard World, we've had Indiana Comic Con, we've had Awesome Con. I'm given to understand some of those lived up to their names more than others. But they, you know, they get some big names in, and you can run into the same people at all of them, but they're not a community event the same way a small fan-run convention is.
Right.
The people who, you know, the things that you get as part of Starbase Indy, there's always great art on the badges. And that's done by, the art this year is being done by the gal who's running registration for the convention. So it's not necessarily like big name professional artists, but it's a member of the community. We get so into our computer screens and sometimes don't have those connections. It's nice to have a place to gather in real life and talk to people who are interested in the same geeky kind of stuff that you are.
Well, you know, there's that that famous Saturday Night Live sketch where William Shatner was on there at a Star Trek convention and told these people to get a life. This is the good life. This is what the life that we need to get right here. These little fan-based conventions where it's like we get to talk to other people like us.
I was really shocked when I had I found Starbase Indy completely by accident. I was supposed to be driving to Florida in 2006 and the weather was going to be bad. And so my friends I was going to go stay with called me up and they're like, bring a coat. And I'm like, yeah, I'm not driving 18 hours for 50 degrees in rainy weather. What else is there to do? And I went to Starbase Indy. And I can honestly say it has completely changed my life because I found a community there that, having grown up on Star Trek series and on Heinlein books and on, you know, Arthur C. Clarke and that great history that science fiction has, in terms of the way it has shaped the possibilities for our future, if you look at some of the science that Star Trek put on the screen for the first time, that communicator's in your pocket now, right?
Right.
So this stuff is really cool, and it's even every day
things like the sliding doors when you go into a grocery store. And then they're working on warp drive, and that's a real thing. And they're working on cloaking technology, and that's turned into a real thing. And the people who have the grounding in that look at the world a different way. We don't necessarily get to spend all of our time around folks with that orientation of what's possible and the future can be different than today is. But you find those people at the small fan-run conventions, and it's really fun to be around them.
Especially when you share that common interest. And, well, you know, you're talking about that. I saw a comic the other day where personnel of the Enterprise were in a city, and they were talking about how their communicators can contact directly to the ship. And the guy goes, yeah, well, I can play music on mine. It's just...
Right.
And I imagine, here's what I imagine, is that there were some geek like us back in the day, hooked on Star Trek and maybe even the original Battlestar Galactica series, saw all this cool technology and said, I'm going to college and going to make that real. We're the ones that created that, us fans. Well, once again, Starbase Indy. The website is starbaseindy.com. They can order tickets online. Is that correct?
Absolutely, yeah. For about 3 more weeks, you'll be able to order tickets online. And if you pre-reg, you get a copy of the program book and you get a pre-made badge and some of the really cool... that kind of swag that's just an added bonus, and it's $5 less than if you buy it at the doors.
$5 less and all that extra bonus stuff? Heck yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The actual event, is if they just show up at the door, basically they can still purchase admission.
Yes.
What time does it start on the 27th? What time does all the good stuff start?
Starts about noon and runs until about 4 o'clock on Sunday.
And all weekend at the hotel, you want to just stay there at the hotel. Where's the hotel? Is the Wyndham?
It's the Wyndham Indianapolis West. It's in... the southwest corner of the city. If you've been around long enough to know where the airport used to be, it used to be one of the airport hotels. It used to be the Adams Mark out by the old airport. But it's a really nice facility. There was the Baby Gen Con convention. Hoosier Con that happens in the spring was there this year, and the hotel was great to work with. And so now we've moved over there, and so that this may be your new geek hotel.
Okay, cool. So Wyndham, Indianapolis West, definitely going to be a fun thing. My purposes when I go there is to meet Jeffrey Combs, Eric Pierpoint, and Katya from Archer. That's going to be my goals. And then after that, it's going to be just talking to a bunch of nerds, which is pretty much what I do all the time anyway. So
what else is there to do that's any fun?
I know, right? That's what we're here for. Starbase Indy, this is the 20th generation. Again, time flux, things have made it so that it's not 20 years, it's 20th generation. What was the year you said it actually started?
1988.
88. I was just starting college at that time. So
yeah, me too.
Now we're going to get on. Lisa, you want to stick around for the rest of the podcast and talk nerdy with
us?
Sure. All right. Awesome. Because I'm sure you got some things to say about some of the topics I'm going to be bringing up here. Speaking of conventions, and I guess probably a fan-run convention, I don't know for sure, because I didn't hear about it until Tim started posting these pictures that made me jealous. Tim Coker, you attended a Supernatural con?
I did.
It was the weekend before Halloween, and I actually kind of, I don't know if I would have gone on my own, but I when I found out about it, I got the tickets kind of as a Halloween present for my wife, who is the Halloween queen. She's all over it. It's like, I actually was kind of indifferent to Halloween until I met my wife, and now it's like my favorite holiday. So, and she and I have both really gotten into Supernatural, but I think she even more than me. So when I knew that Jensen Ackles, Jared Padalecki, and Misha Collins were all going to be there, and that they were doing photo ops, that's when I decided to do it. And it was really expensive, but it was a really fun gift, and we really enjoyed it. So, yeah, it was a lot of fun.
So, yeah, I saw that you posted the photo of all three of those and you and your wife together, and that's what exactly made me jealous. It was like all three in one photo. That's just amazing.
Yeah.
was it a Creation Con? Where was it?
Yeah, it was. And it's interesting that you ask that, because I was going to kind of rag on them a little bit. I don't know. Have you had a lot of experience with Creation Cons?
They are not a fan-run convention, which doesn't make them bad, but it makes it a different experience.
Yeah, yeah. No, I remember when I started going to conventions in the 80s, I never went to a Creation convention, but they didn't have a good reputation, because the reputation was just to kind of give you the bare minimum that they could get away with giving you for your ticket price and nothing else. And that was my experience here. And honestly, I was kind of surprised by that part of it, just because Supernatural has such a creative and psycho-dedicated fan base, you know, that like I associated it with Beetlefest, which they usually have at the same hotel, and it's about the same size. And if you go to that, there's like a fan art gallery, and there's you know, collectibles gallery where people who have these amazing collections display that stuff. And I know that Supernatural doesn't have quite the deep bench that the Beatles do as far as all that goes, but there could have been a lot more sort of buy-in for fans at this con to give it more legitimacy and frankly more variety. So I mean, I would complain about that. Like, you didn't even get a schedule. Like, you don't even get a little booklet about who's at the convention and what's happening when. Like, they couldn't even give you that, you know. My other complaint is that
Starmie Cindy.
Okay, good, good. See, I like that.
So you want to know when stuff is going on so you can go find the cool stuff.
Exactly. And it was a little frustrating for me. And, you know, they didn't have like they should have been having a fan film festival, because I'm sure people make Supernatural fan films. You know, they should be doing stuff like that, because the passion I saw from that crowd was really intense. I was actually a little bit surprised by sort of the emotional raw nerve that comes out a lot. You know, well, okay, I don't think my wife or I were expecting the audience to be as heavily female as it was, but it was very female.
Huh.
And I mean this in the nicest possible way, the kind of level of emotional sort of pain on display occasionally was kind of like going to a Tori Amos show in the early 90s. You know? You know, because Jared Hadalecki has his kind of thing about his depression and anxiety problems, and he's got a whole cause about that, right? So I got a feeling that there's a really strong current of kind of emotional vulnerability and investment that happens in this that I was not prepared for at all. And I give the stars such credit for being so cool with it and really just being very sweet and understanding about it. And, you know, I don't know. They did not seem to be freaked out about it, which was really touching and nice, you know, because conventions should be a safe space. You know, they should be a place where you can go and get away from the crap that you have to put up with in the non-geek world, you know, where you can be into what you're into and not be judged, you know. And I didn't really know that Supernatural had this level of emotional connection with its diehard fan base, but I totally support it and I think it's great. That's definitely something to be prepared for at the con. But it was great. I loved it, and I loved especially the experience of meeting the guys, because that was crazy. Okay, first of all, they are absurdly beautiful guys, like in person.
Right.
They made me feel so like, I mean, average would be a generous word, you know, but it wasn't anything that they were doing. They're like, so like, I understand that this is a performance. And when you're paying for a photo op, you're paying for their performance that they're giving in that room that you get to be photographed during, right?
Right.
Not like I'm getting a ticket to go sleep at his house, you know? But I got to say, and I had something clever in mind, and not really clever. I couldn't think of anything clever, but I had something that I was kind of going to say. And I go up there and I shake Misha Collins' hand, and he's got a nice handshake, and I look him right in the eye, and I'm like, holy crap, that's Misha Collins. And then, you know, next is Jared Padalecki, and he's got a big, warm, firm handshake, and you go, my God, you're tall, you know. And I'm not short, I'm over 6 feet tall, but he's like, he's got to be 6'5 or 6'6. He's really big. And honestly, at that point, I just kind of lost it and was just like, and they, you know, they pull me in and get me into the shot. And Jensen Ackles puts his arm around my wife for the picture, you know, and we're all in there. Hey, you know, and then I was out the door. I didn't even get to say hi to Jensen Ackles, but it's probably on me for not being organized. But Teresa said enough hello for both of us, if you want to know. But so, it was just really cool. They were really nice. And when I went and looked over all the pictures, because they put the pictures all out on a table, you know, and when I looked over all the pictures, every shot looked great. Like, those guys really know how to look good in every picture. And they really had a gift for making people calm down and feel good about the picture that was about to get taken. And I mean, I would say probably one out of three people that went up for their picture would have a meltdown and start to just bawl.
Oh, wow.
You know, like they were, you know, like it's 1964 and they're meeting the Beatles, like, except not with the screaming, but with that level of passion.
Wow.
Right. And yeah, they would just do a really good job talking to the person and calming them down, and everything would be fine, and hugs all around, and then the picture, and your besties for life, you know. So
you got a picture,
I really
to prove it.
That. Those guys, yeah. Although again, another beef. My only previous experience with photo ops is at C2E2, which is one of our two big shows here in Chicago. And I went to C2E2 and I paid for my photo op. And I got in line for my photo op, and they organized it real well. And you got through the line, and you get up there, and you meet Stan Lee, right? And you get your picture with him, and you go, Excelsior. And he's like, eh, 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 you know, with that Stan Lee laugh, right?
Right.
But then you go out, wait
3 to 5 minutes and you get your print and your email account has your JPEG in it. Like, no fooling around, right?
Okay.
With this show, it took 6 hours
for
our pictures to come out.
Oh, man.
6 hours. Now, I know I'm talking first world problems here in a pretty epic way, but 6 hours. And you know, the thing is, like, they would put out from each session and cover up these two big tables, right? And then they wouldn't put any more out until those tables were basically empty. It was maddeningly inefficient, like just crazy inefficient, you know?
It sounds like they were batch printing the photos instead of having a printer on site that could do it. That's been a shift in the technology in the last couple of years.
Yeah.
When I started,
they had
when I started with Starbase Indy half a dozen years ago, we would actually go have them printed professionally and have to, you know, someone would have to physically drive to where we had them printed and then come back with them. But now we've got the sci-fi photo guys coming in and they just print them right on site and they sound more like the experience you have with C2E2.
Yeah. I mean, they had, I would say, I don't know, memory to me, it was a dozen dye sublimation printers, I think, in the back, you know, churning through these things. But I don't know. I don't know what the logistics are, and I have no idea what magical pixie elves they had in back at C2E2. But it was just another – but C2E2, to me, feels like it's extremely fan-friendly, you know. And when I go to C2E2, I really feel respected more than at Wizard World, for instance, where I really feel like cattle. But at C2E2, I always feel kind of like being in is important, you know. And so that was my experience, was that the photo op thing. Oh, and the JPEG, you had to either like fill out a slip by hand with your image number, which you didn't get until you found your print, and then give it back to the photographer, or you have to email and wait like a week and a half for him to get you the JPEG back. And, you know, again, first world problems, right?
Right.
We lose a war. What the hell is this? So anyway, those were my rational complaints about the convention. And if I hadn't had such a narrow focus about meeting the big three, I would have paid more attention to the rest of the guest list, because Crowley was there, Sheriff Chody was there, all kinds of people were there. The real Bobby Singer, you know, the director of the show was there. But we didn't have a lot of time. We didn't budget a lot of time for the show. So I missed most of the panels. I just saw Robert's and Jared Benson's panels. But if you're a Supernatural fan and coming to your town, I would say just, you know, suck it up, pay through your nose, and go and have a little time, because it was really great.
If you're a fan of the show, of anything, you're pretty much going to put up with anything, too. Like you said, first world problems.
It's the difference between a commercial con like Wizard World or Creation and a fan-run con. Nobody at Starbase Indy is making any money.
Right.
We're just out there to create an experience for the fans, because we're a little crazy and also we are fans.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. You're reflecting on the convention that you want to go to, right?
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's interesting.
There's such a difference. Unless you've been to both kinds of conventions, you don't understand how different the feeling is. There's not cattle lines at a fan-run convention. And as soon as you said the big three were there, I could tell you for sure it wasn't a fan-run convention, because the economics of it are such the more commercial conventions come in and bring the Carrie Fishers or the Supernatural stars or the really big names, the more fan conventions are being kind of edged out, which I think they'll come back. I don't think it'll be a lasting thing, but it's kind of tragic as they're getting pushed away, because it's such a different experience.
Well, it's interesting hearing what Tim was saying about his opinion of C2E2 and as averse to other conventions. I've only been to, you know, 3 or 4 myself. I don't know how many Gil you've been to, but it might be interesting. Not right now, because they would take up the rest of the show, but it might be an interesting discussion to talk about what works for the, you know, as a fan, what works at a convention and what doesn't work, you know, when conventions go bad, as it were.
Well, that's one of the things, and I like to liken it to a corporate world. That's one of the reasons I almost got out of radio altogether, was corporate radio taking over and just totally ruining it for the people that like to listen to the radio station. You know, they made things automated so they didn't have to pay salaries and stuff like that. I went to a Wizard World convention, and I will never go to another Wizard World convention again. I mean,
wow,
it's just, like Tim said, cattle. That's you feel like that 100%. That's why I won't really go to San Diego Comic Con, even though it's supposed to be the world's biggest. But our last one I went to was back in the 80s in the San Diego Comic Con. And I don't think I'd go again, because the way I see the reports of it is like, I bet you I'd feel like cattle again. I don't think Wizard World runs that one. The Wizard World ones, it's just, no. Oh my gosh, you get frustrated, really. And it's like, I just came here to have kind of fun. Each convention's got its own, and here's another thing. Those Wizard World, a few others, and not to talk bad about cons in general, but the ones that have like multiple fan base built in or multiple things going on, those can get a little bit confusing too, because then you're running into people that want to go, you know, they want to go see this TV star, and then the other ones that I want to see this comic book artist, you know, it's like it started getting mixed up in there. I think we talked about this before, where cons are getting saturated. There's not a North American city anymore that does not have some sort of con going on. I think we're going to reach that saturation, and they're going to start to go back, well, like Starbase Indie, going back to the fan base and doing that one. Like we did the Nerd Con. It was all fans. We were just having fun, and those types of cons, I think those are the ones that are going to, after the explosion, I think they're the ones that are going to succeed afterwards. So,
well, you know, I just don't want to feel like I'm being gouged, you know,
right?
I mean, here's the thing, every person who goes to a convention goes expecting and wanting to spend money,
right?
Okay, I mean, it's built in, you don't need to gouge and nickel and dime people left and right, because otherwise they're going to feel like they've been, you know, poked and prodded and relieved of all their money. If you just let them, you know, provide them with genuine good opportunities to spend their money, good photo opportunities, and fans will stand in line to spend their money. You know, it's like, you know, shut up and take my money already.
Yeah.
This nickel and dime thing, and where you feel like they're just, you know, like they're just hooking up a vacuum to your wallet, it's no fun. It literally sucks all the fun out of it.
And that's what I, you know, liken it to the corporate world, the way a lot of them go. And that's why I like these little smaller ones. And, you know, then again, we as fans will put up with just about anything if it actually comes down to meeting someone that we really want to meet, like Tim did with the Big Three. You know, like you said, first world problems.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think a lot of it comes down to hype, you know, and Wizard World definitely arrives in a deafening, you know, thunderclap of hype. You know, they really saturate the market, and they bring out every possible person anybody could ever want to maybe buy a picture of or whatever, you know. And so thing is, an event like that, you know, a lot of fans go, but you're getting a lot of civilians too, as it were. You know, you're getting a lot of people who aren't really big enough fans to go to like a fan convention. This is kind of part of mainstream geek culture, and now people who just like the Avengers, you know, the Marvel movies, will pay all this money and go to Wizard World, you know, and you've got mobs of people who really aren't kind of on the wave, if you know what I mean. And I feel like that convention, it's even C2E2, which is, to my mind, more fan-oriented, but I would say that for what you're saying about Starbase Con too, definitely, is when you're a convention like that, you're around fans, you know, like if you're a fan and you go to a convention like this, you're not going to have a lot of yokel around who don't know the score, you know what I mean? You're going to be around, like I said, it gets back to being a safe space and being a place where you can kind of let your freak flag fly, you know. And I think that that's what smaller fan-run conventions have to offer, and I think that's the vital thing to remember as a fan, is that sense of fellowship versus the sense of being part of a giant money-sucking funnel. You know, and I mean, I'll jump in that funnel if I can go get my picture taken with Stan Lee, don't get me wrong, but they're two different experiences, you know.
Yeah.
And so I totally love what you say about the convention you're putting on.
And when you look at what some of the bigger conventions are doing, you know, Wizard World came in Indianapolis and intentionally, it appears, intentionally picked a date that was right before another established convention. This is a practice they have. It's a way they try to take market share. So there's a certain predatory aspect that we're seeing with the commercial conventions that it's just a little sketchy. I won't go to commercial conventions because I don't want to give them my money. I want to save it for the folks who are doing conventions that I respect. Now, I go to half a dozen or more conventions a year, but they're all the fan-run ones, and it's because you have such great conversations there.
Yeah, I think I just realized it as you said that the one Wizard World Con that I went to, the way I feel now and the way you're talking about the predatory nature, they're like the Walmart of conventions.
Well,
that's it.
Well, they really are.
At least you had a good time for what you did. That's the best part about it.
Oh, I'll tell you what. Honestly, Teresa's already making a plan for next year. So it looks like we're going back.
Well, you know what? I might see if I can come up there and visit you guys while that's going on conveniently.
All right.
I wouldn't mind going to see a Supernatural Con.
Don't you mean conveniently? I'll be here all week. Thanks.
Well, I want to go up for C2E2. We should go up. We need to all take a road trip up there for that.
Yeah, we should. Once
Chicago has a great fan-run convention culture as well. I'm going up for Little Literary Con next weekend, and I'm going to meet Christopher Moore, who's an author. I don't know if you know his work, Lamb, and Practical Demon Keeping. And
oh, I read Lamb. That's a good book.
Yeah, and the author's going to be at a convention called LindyCon in Chicago this coming weekend, and then there's CapraCon up there in February. So they've got a good culture of small fan-run conventions up there as well.
All right, well, let's move on to another topic. We can. It's not a Nerd Up podcast without complaining, so I think we've done that. Let's talk about
that. Oh, I wouldn't guarantee that that's all the complaining that we're here.
Oh, no. Oh, no, there's still more to come. In fact, let's move on to, real quickly, I'm sure it's just going to be a short subject this time around, talking about some television nerdiness. First of all, again, it's a great time to be a nerd. All these comic books that we loved as kids are now on television. And again, it's the same thing with the nerds doing the technology. I think it's the same thing, the nerds reading those comic books saying, hey, I'm going to Hollywood, and I'm going to put this on TV. Have any of you guys the Supergirl series?
I've seen the first half of the first episode.
Okay, so first half and first episode. Well, what about you, Lisa? Have you had time for a
show? No, I haven't watched that.
Oh, well, I watched the first episode. I got the second one DVR'd. I'm going to watch it. And let me give my opinion, and I'll let you guys throw something out if you want to. I will say this, that I think they tried to cram a lot of stuff in that first episode. It was...
You think?
I think they ran like 30 years worth of comic books into one episode. Getting a new fan to say, okay, this is the reason why we want this to be a series, I think they kind of overachieved. But at the same time, there's some new fans out there that never knew that backstory and all this other good stuff. So, yeah. I mean, I would like to see the backstory unfold a little more throughout. But, you know, kind of like what Arrow does, how the backstory is still constantly going even in this new season. I think that would have been nicer, a little bit slower paced. And, the other thing was, see, I've never read any Supergirl comics. The whole Superman, Superboy, Supergirl, Superdog, whatever, any super anything, I kind of don't like those anyway, because I don't like the idea of, no matter what goes on, you want to try to explain this power, the answer is, he's an alien. You know, why does he have laser vision? He's an alien.
He's an alien.
How come he can fly? He's an alien.
How come nothing kills him? He's an alien.
In this one, James Olsen is sent to keep an eye on her as instructed by the big guy, Superman. I thought that was kind of weird. I don't know if that's ever been in the comics, but I just thought that was weird. And then her sister, being the head of a secret agent or secret organization run by the government to protect us from aliens, I think that was a bit much too, but I'm still going to watch it because it's a TV show that's not afraid to have superpowers on the TV show. And we're going to have all sorts of cool villains of the week come on, I think, too.
I just have to say this, and I've only seen the first half of the first episode, and it's been a little while, but the one thing that stuck with me immediately, because we've had this discussion about, the Marvel 50s, after World War II, Peggy Carter.
Oh, yeah, Agent Carter,
Yeah. We had this discussion about Peggy Carter was the feminism theme, right?
Right.
And I didn't really feel like I was being hit over the head with it, although I do remember there was some of that feeling in the beginning. But it was obviously there, and it was part of the show, but I never felt like I was being preached at or beat over the head with anything. Supergirl, the first half of the first episode, of like, I mean, they couldn't be any more on the nose or spook fantasy. Gee, it sure is being tough being a girl living in the shadow of such a big guy. And it's like, they're just overplaying the fact that this is going to be a woman. It's too obvious. They're just going for there's no subtlety to it. There's no art to it.
Right.
And it just brought back that conversation, because I was like, okay, if you compare this to Peggy Carter, then, you know, Peggy Carter was extremely subtle comparatively.
Yeah, in other words, they didn't have to tell you how strong of a female she was. Unlike Supergirl, they had to tell you over and over again. Like how we're having a problem with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. with Daisy.
Yeah, right. Where it's show, don't tell, but if you don't have anything to show, you just tell.
Right?
Eric, that's a really good insight about the kind of feminist characteristics of that versus Agent Carter, because I actually was really amazed at how often I wanted to high-five the TV when I was watching Agent Carter because of the points it was making, but how seldom they just came out and looked right into the camera and told you what the point was. And I felt like in the Supergirl pilot anyway, there are at least three or four moments where everything screeches to a halt so somebody can say, I'm sure glad my daughter has her to look up to or whatever.
Yeah.
And it's being written for fifth graders. I know that, you know, everything is supposed to be written at a fifth grade level of comprehension, but Agent Carter wasn't, you know,
no.
And I have kind of the same problem with all those Greg Berlanti shows, you know, Arrow and Flash and now Supergirl, is that all of them, for whatever other good things they have, they're incredibly dumbly written. Like, everything is so dumbed down. Everything is explained to the nth degree so that nobody has to think at all about anything they're seeing. You know, and there's all that kind of easy piano music time where people talk about their feelings in really cliched ways. I don't know. Like, it's kind of like Flash, where I had to come to terms with the fact that Flash is a kind of show that I don't like and I'm not really authorized to critique because I just don't like it enough to find the good in it, but that I love their comic bookness enough that I still recommend the show and still watch it. This show, I don't know. I want to like it. I love the effects. I love the action in it. I think that the actress who's playing Kara is fantastic. She's great.
Yeah,
I think she's going to be a ton of fun on the show. You know, her crushing geek friend zone guy is kind of...
Well,
you like everything in the Greg Berlanti universe. It's incredibly on the nose. You know, everything about that is like, oh, that's what that is. You know, right down to horrible Calista Flockhart and her almost pretty fish face doing her best Meryl Streep imitation. You know, I don't like her anyway. I've never liked her. It's one of those things where it's a visceral actor dislike thing. So she's like kryptonite to me, but maybe she'll win me over.
I see what you did there. Yeah.
Oh, also, she gave Harrison Ford that embarrassing earring.
Well, was she the one responsible? I didn't realize it. Okay.
That was a gift from her.
Oh,
thanks, Calista.
It was more like,
thank you, Calista.
That's my Harrison Ford.
Thank you very much.
So, it's a comic book, but I don't know. I'm going to have to give it a few episodes, but I still watch The Flash. I still watch Arrow. I still watch S.H.I.E.L.D., and I'm trying to think of anything else that's out there. iZombie. I mean, maybe it's going to take some time, but after a while, after the fans start to say, you know, you could do it better, because that's what it took for Arrow. Remember when they first started, it was dark and dismal and, you know, Dark Knight type of writing. And then after a while, after Flash came on the air, it became, oh yeah, we're a comic book. That's right. It got a little bit better. So maybe. We'll see. But at least she's got a colorful costume. It's actually a red and blue costume. And I did.
Yeah, they're going for it.
Yeah, and there's two things that I actually thought was extremely charming, if you will. One of them was her selection of the costume, getting that ready. They went through, and I do know from looking at comic book covers of Supergirl that they put in several different during her costume trying out. There were actually variations that were on comic book covers, so that was kind of clever. And the other thing I thought was great was her adopted parents, Dean Cain, and forgive me, I can't remember the actress's name that played Supergirl in the movie, but that was the adopted mother.
Slater.
But as I thought, that was
Slater's sister, right?
That was like a clever cameo.
Yeah.
I mean, I doubt if we see him very many more times during the series, but it was just nice for, you know, oh yeah, hey, that's the Superman and Supergirl.
Yeah, it was cute.
Yeah.
It was cute. The Berlanti universe really loves that kind of fan service.
Yeah, and I thought that worked. I mean, to me, it worked because they kept it so brief. You know, if they had tried to drag on with it, I think I would have lost that. It would have lost the cuteness for me. Anyway, so
the special effects weren't bad.
No.
The plane, you know, it wasn't, you know, like out of this world, but it wasn't cheesy or terrible looking. And, you know, that's a pretty tall order for a TV show, you know, to save a plane that's crashing into the river.
Yeah, that was definitely a good. I wonder if they blew their budget on the pilot episode, though. We'll see.
You know, I'm going to say no. I'm just going to say no, and I'll tell you why. And this is a hobby horse of mine on the show. Flash puts really, really, really great looking comic come to life level super action on TV every week.
Right. So you're saying
I don't know why Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. can't do it, but
yeah.
But the Flash pulls it off every week. I would be shocked if Supernatural We'll call her Supernatural Girl. She is able to do the same.
Yeah, all right. You know, you got a point there. You got a point there. Well, speaking of S.H.I.E.L.D., let's jump onto that real quick. You guys caught up on that one? I know Eric's not.
I didn't see last night's.
Oh.
I didn't see last night's either. The last one I saw was the Desert Planet one.
Oh, gosh. Darn it.
Which I liked.
Well, yeah, that was a really good one. Gosh.
Hold off.
There is so much to tell you about that last episode. You guys got to watch it. I just can't. But there's a huge reveal towards the end of this latest episode about Lash. And it's like, I'm at the point right now, and I really wanted to discuss it tonight. I'm at the point right now, I was like, did you really just do that? Are you really wanting to get rid of your viewers? But I wanted that was my feeling. So I'll wait till you guys get caught up, and we'll talk about it.
I've got to do a marathon one weekend.
It's an interesting reveal. Since you guys aren't caught up, let's move on to another one. I do want to just throw this one out there. Walking Dead, the last episode of The Walking Dead. I don't know what any of you guys keeping up on that, but the last episode was one of the coolest episodes of The Walking Dead ever. And
That's another one I'm not caught up on, but I've gone on the DVR, but I've already been spoiled or semi-spoiled on what the major happening. I'm not even going to do this to anyone else. If there's just a major happening within the last two episodes, I guess.
Just make sure you're not friends with Dad on Facebook and you'll probably avoid it.
Well, yeah, cut yourself off from all social media and you'll avoid it, but otherwise someone's going to spoil
it. Someone will spoil it. Yeah, I mean, the last one is actually a storyline. It was the backstory of Morgan. It was an hour and a half long episode, and it was just the coolest. It was just a two-man show, Morgan and the guy that, I guess you could say, the guy that trained him. And it was one of the most, I thought it was great. And it was actually needed after I'm not going to spoil it here on the podcast. But the one episode before that where the major event happened, it was great because this one was like, okay, let me relax and get my blood pressure down. But yeah, it was one of the coolest. It was really a really nice episode. Like I said, just a two-man show between these two actors, and wow, did they just rock it. So.
Wait, so was it just Morgan and Donatello? Because if you try to tell me that Donatello isn't who trained Morgan, then you're wrong.
Well, he did have a dome top, so and he did wear a Save the Terrapins T-shirt.
Hey, spoilers!
The guy who played that part, I saw like bits and pieces of it as I was flipping through channels, is the same guy who played Marge's husband in Fargo, isn't it?
I don't know. I think so.
I'm pretty sure it is, and I've seen him in a lot of things. He's a really good actor, but he looks just like kind of tall, but he just looks like this nondescript kind of guy that you'd see anywhere, you know, but he's really good at blending into these characters and really good, solid character actor. I'm looking forward to watching it, but
I think it's one of the best non-action episodes of Walking Dead ever. I mean, there's some action in it, but not as much as like the one before, the week before. But it's definitely it was a great story, and it was just I loved watching it. It was a tearjerker too.
Here's my prediction though: is that last season is probably going to be, as far as number of people watching, is probably going to be the high point for the series. I predict that it's going to slowly die off after this. I really think that doing the second series was not a good idea, and I think that's kind of and I think that that's kind of sapping some of the energy. But I talked to one of my friends, says he likes Fear better than he liked the season of Walking Dead.
Wow.
And I only saw the first two episodes, so I can't really judge the entire thing, but I really wasn't impressed.
Well, it did get renewed for another season.
Yeah,
we'll see what happens. Hopefully you're not right.
But you know, something else that got picked up for a second season, and I just saw it just premiered, Ash versus the Evil Dead.
Oh my gosh, I saw the pilot episode of that.
I don't know what to think, man. I didn't like it. The very first scene was just like, this is a different movie than, this is not the Evil Dead movies. There's nothing in that episode, of that first episode, that is other than you know, the fact that there are deadites or zombies, and you've got Ash. Other than that, that's the only thing that's there. This is not Evil Dead. It's just,
it's Sam Raimi and Bruce Campbell back together again.
It is, and I so much want to like this. I really do. I'm going to give it a few more episodes, but right now I'm very disappointed in that first episode.
Of course you want to like it. You're the one with the Evil Dead shirt on our logo.
There you go. I'm the Evil Dead guy.
Now, the scene you're talking about, is that the bar?
Yeah.
I thought that was when I came. I'm like, what?
Sex was never part of.
Yeah, we can do without that. Yeah.
I mean, even in the director's cut of Army of Darkness, you get like about a 5-second silhouetted love scene between him and Sheila, the main girl in that, which wasn't in the original cut. But anyway, but it's just a few seconds. And it's not, you know, and it's tastefully done and it's over with, you know,
yeah.
And it honestly, it didn't need to be there. The original cut was just fine without it. But anyway,
yeah, they tried to go Game of Thrones.
Yeah. But I mean, it was like I said, it was just a silhouette, you know, yeah. Right? So you get, you know, just the side silhouette of her on top of him.
Yeah, but in the series, it was just blatant, just right out there. Like I said, they tried to go Game of Thrones there.
Right, and it's not really that funny. I mean,
no, it wasn't.
I keep wondering, it's like, okay, they're getting to a joke or they're getting to a gag somewhere here, and it just hasn't gotten there yet.
Without that scene, I think the whole show could have gone on, and that whole scene wouldn't have been missed anyway. There's nothing in there.
Yeah, I mean, it's already well established that Ash is a loser. He's living in a trailer.
Yeah.
You know, that he's at the bottom of the barrel.
And he's not even working at S-Mart.
And that, yeah, what's up with that?
It's like, wait a minute.
I mean, this is Sam Raimi. He owns the series, right?
Yeah.
He owns movies. So they've already established S-Mart as lore. That's where Ash works. Now it's, what is the name of it?
I don't even remember. That's how good it was. I don't even remember what the store was. So yeah,
I'll give it a few more episodes. But yeah, right now I'm severely disappointed.
Well, I had fun with his. I mean, he had his reign of one-liners as the show progressed. And that's what I like about Bruce Campbell and Sam Raimi teaming up together. And they had the Lucy Lawless cameo. I can't wait to see the other Xena Warrior Princess stars come up.
Yeah, I hope she's in it more than just that.
I know, right? Just like that one scene. Like what? Oh,
yeah. But they kind of did the same thing. And Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah, Lucy Lawless just is like, I'll just show up real quick.
Yeah, oh yeah,
she's Lucy like photobombing.
Lawless is gonna be in the show. Oh no, she's not.
Yeah. and she's just photobombing shows now.
Yeah, that's what she's
Shoto bombing.
Shoto. Oh, we got something going now. Shoto bombing. I'm telling you. Anybody else got another TV show you want to talk about?
I've got.
Do you want to talk about the new Star Trek series?
That's what I want to talk about.
Yeah.
That's what. Hold on, Isaac. What'd you say?
I was gonna obligatorily ask Tim Coker how caught up he is on Steven Universe.
No, farther. It's been a busy week.
That's the obligatory question. Okay, we're moving on.
But it's because I was busy making Steven Universe pumpkins for Halloween.
Yeah,
that's fair enough.
Yeah, and those were awesome, by the way. Congrats on and the Supernatural pumpkins too. Oh man,
those were way better than mine.
Thanks, guys.
Yeah,
those put those were... on our Facebook page.
Yeah, do that because they were beautiful pumpkins. Like I said, the Steven Universe one got me, and I'm like, that's the first one I noticed. I'm like, look what you did, Isaac. Influenced his pumpkins.
Yeah.
and then of course the Supernatural ones are really cool.
Well, we were a little bit inspired, you know, but it, you know, what's funny is not a single person seemed to get the Supernatural reference, but Steven Universe was huge. Not only would the kids see it, but then they would get really excited and get their friends and point to it. They'd be, look, it's Steven, man. It's Steven. That's love, man. There was one dude. I should post a picture of him. There was this kid walking down the street, and he yells to his brother, who's walking ahead of him. He's like, hey, look, it's Steven. And, you know, the kid was maybe 12, and his brother comes back. And his brother, facial hair. I think he looked like he was maybe 18. And his brother was a black dude dressed as Steven Universe. It was awesome.
He had
you know, the red t-shirt, the star on it, and he like arranged his hair so that it kind of came out like Steven's. So we got a picture of him with the pumpkin. It was pretty good.
Nice. Maybe you should have made a rose quartz tombstone.
Wow.
We did.
You did? I didn't see that.
Oh no, not a tombstone. No, I'm sorry. We made the rose quartz pumpkin.
Yeah. I'm thinking because you'd made the Supernatural tombstone. I thought rose quartz tombstone would have been cool, but Isaac said, soon.
I only had one in me to do the tombstone in me this year. So.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, let's move on. I was going to talk about the Star Trek series. They announced it for 2017. Here's my issues, and Lisa, I'm going to have you jump in on this because I would say right now you are our resident Star Trek expert. I mean, other than Tim Coker. But anyway, first of all,
not an expert.
Well, okay. Yeah, true. We'll go.
I'm not an expert either, by the way. But.
Well, you guys are supposed to accept these titles and just say, yes, yes, that's me.
Yes, Gil, yes I am.
Yeah, see? But anyway, I got a couple issues with it. First of all, it's going to be on a subscription service. CBS will be launching their CBS Access subscription service. Okay, I can see why they're doing Star Trek on there, because they need somebody to watch or to subscribe. And so that's, there's a lot of fans out there. Now, the other thing is that the creators are the ones that created the reboots. Therefore, it sounds like the new Star Trek series is going to take place in the timeline of the reboots, which I know a lot of people are going to be annoyed by that.
Dan just loves the reboots.
Yes. I have said all I'm going to say on the matter.
I haven't. You on that.
Oh, no. It's going to be interesting to see what they do with it. I mean, granted, it's going to be another sci-fi series. It's going to be out there. They're trying to compete with the Amazons, the Netflixes, the Hulus. Okay, and they're going to do it with maybe this is going to be their anchor. I don't know for sure, but this is the first thing I've heard announced for them. And
it's the first thing they're putting out on the streaming service.
Yeah.
From what I've read, they're going to broadcast the first episode on CBS, and then the rest of it is only going to be available on the streaming service, which is really fascinating to me, because it's great that they have the confidence in Star Trek as a brand to launch a streaming service. But if you're going to launch a streaming service that you want people to pay $6 or $7 a month to get the content off of just your one channel, is it really geek-oriented programming that you think is going to drive that? Because if there's one group of people who are going to find a way around that, it's probably your geeks. I'm not saying that's right. I'm just saying, I don't know if they've thought that all the way through.
Right.
I saw something online that said that, you know, Game of Thrones has the record of the most pirated television show in history. And there was some mention that, you know, that title is about to pass on to Star Trek once they launch it on this subscription service. Because I was like, come on.
Yeah.
Only the most hardcore Star Trek fans are going to lay down $6 or $7 a month just to watch a handful of new Star Trek episodes, when the fact is that once it's out there, people will find a way to break the encryption and copy it and put it out on BitTorrent, and that's it, you know?
But will they be willing to do it with the reboot timeline?
Well, and that's the other thing. A lot of the folks, I do know a lot of hardcore Star Trek people who are, like you, not necessarily huge fans of the reboot timeline.
That's putting it nicely. Yeah, and that, I don't know. It's great that we have another Star Trek series. When I heard that, cool. But then all these little ifs come in. I'm like, oh, man, it's not going to be as cool as I thought.
And my fear is that this is a thing that could damage the franchise, because this is a big ask. In the world of Netflix, where for $8 a month, you get Daredevil and you get all of that original programming and you get all of the rest of the Netflix library, right?
Right.
You're going to pay almost that much for a platform that has content developed by one channel and one original series. Maybe there will be more, but if that value proposition doesn't appeal to people, people may come back and say, well, science fiction obviously isn't commercially viable.
Right, yeah, yeah.
Good I guarantee right. you'll be able to watch back episodes of CSI and CSI Miami. I guarantee.
Yeah. Well, what I'm thinking is, think of some old CBS TV shows. Was $6 Million Man CBS? Can't remember.
I think it was.
If it was, then
maybe.
Boom, you got me as an audience, because you can't get the $6 Million Man hardly at all, and you know, anymore.
Well, happened to that? why is that not on Netflix?
That I think because somebody owns it. I think it just recently got is getting ready to be released. But
they're doing a movie, I think, or maybe it is a new series. Actually, it is a new series.
Well, no, I'm thinking they're doing. Releasing the old issues or the old episodes on DVD. I think that's getting ready to happen.
That kind of deal.
And so, if that's the case, if it's a CBS venture, then CBS could put it on that CBS Access. That'll attract some more people. If that's the case, you know, but I'm thinking, you know, along that line, those old series like that, I think The Incredible Hulk was on a CBS, but I'd have to look those up. But if they could release alongside, like you said, Netflix has got all that other content, not just the series. And if they could throw in some more content that would be worthwhile, then maybe they could get something going.
I mean, they do have Big Bang Theory as a CBS show. Mm. It looks like The Incredible Hulk actually is all five seasons of that are available on Netflix.
Oh, okay. But if it's a CBS property, maybe they can move it.
And that's an old CBS property.
Yeah, that's the thing with Netflix. They what they have rights to today, they may not tomorrow.
Yeah.
Right. Well, they may not stream tomorrow, yeah.
Well, I've got all the Incredible Hulk on DVD anyway, so you guys come on my house and watch that anyway. You don't have to worry about streaming.
I want to say, though, about the cost of the per episode to watch. You know, when we talk about this, everything you guys say is very persuasive, but then I look at it from the perspective of if you want to watch the show, let's say you want to, like, rent it to watch on Amazon Prime or whatever, on Amazon.com or on iTunes or whatever. If you break it down, there are four episodes in a month and you're paying $5.99 per month, then you're paying, what, $1.25 episode?
Right.
$1.50? Math is terrible, honestly. That's not that much, really, if you look at it that way. It's probably cheaper than renting the episode on one of those other services, right?
Right. That makes sense, yeah.
Well, so anyway, we were talking about it was some kind of incredible deal breaker, but when you look at it per episode cost, if I was a bigger Star Trek fan, I would probably pay it.
Yeah,
I mean, I basically subscribed to HBO mainly for Game of Thrones, which is 10 episodes, which is two and a half months basically, and I think I pay 17 or 18 bucks a month for HBO on top of my cable. So yeah, that's probably quite a hefty fee to pay just for one show.
Yeah, I'll say. Yeah, I guess when you break it down like that, we don't know yet what other content they're going to put on CBS Access, but at first thought for me, it's like, oh, I got to pay to watch this, like, for the entire season or series of this. How many seasons are they going to go with it? Is it worth the gamble for me to invest in it now? In fact, a friend of mine and I were talking about this the other day, about the future of broadcast television, standard broadcast television. With all these subscription services out there available, standard broadcast television, is pretty much gone by the wayside. And all these subscription services, how many can we take before we reach saturation? That's what I'm worried about.
Yeah, the subscription services are definitely disrupting the model. I haven't used cable. I just had internet for a couple of years now, and I've got a couple of teenagers in my household, and Comcast did a thing where they were like, yeah, but we're going to send you a cable box, because you have to have a cable box, because your internet's going to be cheaper if you let us give you cable, too. And these are very tech-savvy teenagers, and I put the cable box in the living room, and they just never bothered to set it up, because they're not used to watching TV that way, and they don't really care.
Well, same here. I got this teenager sitting right next to me here, Isaac. We got cable, and he watches YouTube or other services.
That's because you don't buy Netflix.
See, and that would be an internet service, really. Although on Dish Network, we can get Netflix. That whole model of Netflix did it first with House of Cards. Just blew up the whole idea. It was like, well, we can get a series, and we can get it all at once, like with Daredevil 2, And like we were talking before about the Jessica Jones series coming up, when they release it, at least us guys here on the Nerd Up podcast, we're going to watch every single episode in a row, and we're going to say, oh, man, when's the next one? It's totally, you can binge watch, and that's become a big thing now.
I watch TV completely differently than I did 5 years ago, because I will pick a series, and I'll watch it all in a row, whereas 5 years ago I was watching on cable and I would watch, three or four series, five or six series in a season. And so every week you're watching one episode of a bunch of different things. And now I tend to watch series all in a row. So it's a different viewing experience.
Well, like right now, I've been going through all my DVR stuff. I don't watch anything on regular television at all. And then I'll go through and right now I'm in the middle of finishing up last season's Arrow and getting ready to start the new season. And by the time I'm done, I'll have that all finished. Then I'll go back and start on The Flash. And then I'll go back and start on iZombie. I've got it all. I'm just going to binge watch them, like two or three episodes a night or something like that. It's completely different. Yeah, I'm with you. I don't watch television at all.
Don't forget about The Strain.
Well, you know what? I was so upset. First of all, I didn't know they started up again. Eric, we had talked about that before. And I went and tried to find it on demand, and only like two episodes were available on demand. And they were middle of the season episodes. And I'm like,
yeah.
I was like, come on. So, yeah, I missed that one completely. I missed that one. If I'd have known, I could have had a DVR and I could have watched that. But yeah, you're absolutely right. Don't watch it the same. So maybe the subscription. But then again, I don't want to pay for another subscription service. I've got my cable. and that's it. Even Netflix, Isaac keeps trying to talk me into it. Even though they're releasing these awesome series, it's just I can't find myself to pay another amount of money for another service that I'm just going to use on occasion. Although I know if I did, Isaac would be getting the use out of it, so he'd be watching.
Well, I tell you what, if I had to choose between cable and Netflix, or basically just say internet-based streaming,
right?
I would give up cable in a second if I could keep my Netflix.
Well, see, I've got the cable, and I don't want to get Netflix. All right. Well, so we'll see how well they do with the new Star Trek series. It's going to be interesting. Again, the Access or CBS Access subscription service, that's one thing keeping me at bay. The other thing is if they're going to put it in the new reboot timeline, that's what's going to keep me at bay as well, because I'm not. I enjoyed watching those movies. Don't get me wrong. I enjoyed watching them. But I was so frustrated as a Star Trek fan that it's like, no, that's not how it happened. That keeps me away from it as well. All right. Was there another topic anybody wanted to bring up?
I saw a movie, which apparently it's at some theaters. But, you know, where I live, it wasn't playing in any theaters. It was just on pay-per-view. It's called Bone Tomahawk. And my friend Kirk, he posted an expletive. He just posted a link to the movie and it's just like, holy blank. And I'm like, okay, that was enough to get my interest. It's a Western with Patrick Wilson and Kurt Russell. Kurt Russell in a Western, I'm there. But it's also a horror movie. It's basically like The Hills Have Eyes set in the Old West. It's not really that original, but it's very gory. And it's got a bunch of good actors in it. So anyway, it was for Halloween viewing. It was pretty cool. But it's just, it's got a couple of moments that are just like a real, you see what's going on and you just kind of imagine it happening to yourself. And it's just one of those really cringeworthy movies.
Yeah, that's my favorite.
It's kind of in the same vein as, what is that, The Green Inferno, the Eli Roth horror film that was just at theaters that I haven't seen yet, which was one of those cannibal apocalypse type movies, big gore fest. Anyway, it's kind of along those lines. Bone Tomahawk, really gross, not much else. It's kind of a story we've seen all many, many times.
Well, I read the IMDb link you gave me, and I'm like, huh. So I'm gonna have to see. But
it's got Sean Young, Matthew Fox, who was on Lost, Sid Haig, David Arquette.
Sid Haig? Okay.
Yeah, he's like in the first like 5 minutes or for first 5 or 10 minutes of it.
Captain Howdy, right? Is it
Captain Howdy? Yep.
Yeah. Okay.
And what was his name in Jason of Star Command? He was Tim. You should know this. Oh, what was his character's name?
What, the bad guy?
Yeah. Am I wrong?
Oh, was that it? Guy. Sure. Who Sid Haig is? Jason of Star Command was a sequel, by the way. I tell you this, sequel to what other Captain. Show? That is correct.
Dragos,
of course.
Dragos. Okay. Would you recommend or not recommend that movie?
If you didn't pay more than $3.99 and you're a horror film fan, and it's a curiosity because it has so many good actors in it, and you know the performances are strong, but it's just like, okay, why was this film made?
Knowing the kind of movies All that right. I like Sid Haig in, and that's Devil's Rejects and House of a Thousand Corpses, I love those movies just for the gross factor, I guess you'd say. Or, well, no, can't say that. Devil's Rejects had a great, cool storyline to me.
I just thought of a good analogy or a good analog for the film.
Okay.
Is From Dusk Till Dawn. So you start off with like good actors and actually you start to get a little interested in the characters and then you basically throw them all in a meat grinder.
Okay. Let's go ahead and call a close to the podcast. So first of all, before we end everything, once again, go to starbaseindy.com. Lisa would greatly appreciate it because, you know, you got to hang out with me and her out at the in Starbase Indy on Thanksgiving weekend. And we're going to have some fun. We're going to hang out with some celebrities. We're going to talk with a bunch of geeks. It's just going to be a fun time. Once again, Lisa, thanks for joining us and talking about Starbase Indy.
Thanks for coming. I hope I see you all there.
Oh, you'll definitely see me. Probably going to see Isaac. Because he's my assistant, whether he likes it or not.
I'm not going to be an assistant. I'm going to be dragged there.
He'll be my drag-along assistant.
Cyanide tablet. Don't worry about it.
So we'll have some good times. So that, once again, that's Thanksgiving weekend. If you're in the Indianapolis area, that's the best place to be. What's the name of the hotel again, Lisa?
Wyndham Indianapolis West.
Wyndham, Indianapolis West. So head out there, be there, go to starbaseindy.com, find out more information, check out all the people you're going to be able to meet. One thing that's got me, there's something about quantum physics, a kind of a lecture on, or no, was it quantum mechanics?
That was your panel, yeah.
Yeah, and I was like, that was intriguing. And it's actually hosted by a scientist.
Yeah, we've got lots of scientists that come out, both as attendees and panelists. We have conversations on all kinds of interesting stuff. And the thing that makes Fan Run conventions different is the community and the conversations that you get to have there.
Yeah, definitely so. Yeah, and that's I'm looking forward to that. So it's going to be a blast. I'll be there. So in the meantime, don't forget, help support the podcast. You can go to nerduppodcast.blogspot.com. You can click on the little link that'll send you to our merchandise table where you can buy all sorts of wonderful t-shirts, coffee mugs, messenger bags, just about anything that we can put our logo on, it's got it. And we even tried the neighbor's dog, but we found out he's only one of those and you can't make a profit selling just one. But he's got our logo. He's got the logo on him. There's all sorts of ways to support the podcast, and you can check that out. Also, again, good news. Home, the Kickstarter for Home, it did get funded completely. Home, the girl with the blue hair, it's fully funded for issue one, five or six series, or six issue series. So let's see. So I guess that's it. I'm Gil T. Wilson. You can reach me on Twitter at Gil Wilson.
I'm Eric Billingsley. You can reach me at Eric Bill.
And I'm Tim Coker. You can reach me at Tim K. Say.
I'm Isaac Wilson. You can reach me at EvilBacon88 on Twitter.
I'm Lisa Meese, and you can reach Starbase Indie at Starbase Indie on Twitter.
All sorts of ways to get a hold of us. That's it for the Nerd Up Podcast. Guys, like we say every single week, stay nerdy.
Stay nerdy. Nerd Up.
The experts at Web.com want to build your business a successful website for free, just like we did for these current Web.com customers.
We've looked at other website designers. There's nobody better than Web.com.
Web.com can build your website in as little as 7 days, free. Plus, we'll promote it on all the major search engines. If after 30 days you're happy, we'll continue to provide promotion, hosting, support, and maintenance, all for one low monthly fee. If not, cancel and pay nothing.
If you're in business and you don't have a web presence, you won't be taken seriously.
Call right now and you'll also get a free .com or .net domain name for your new website powered by VeriSign, the world's leading domain name provider.
No upfront charge for site build, after which ongoing fees apply. Rights to site are relinquished when canceled. Domain included during active service, after which fees apply.
Call 855-719-3093, 855-719-3093, 855-719-3093. That's 855-719-3093.